Welcome back to the second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only.
Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with your host, Pete Talbot, along with Dr. Samara Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you an opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here's your host of Leading Edge Medicine, Pete Talbot.
Well, here we go. This is actually our number four of Leading Edge Medicine every Saturday. Oh, about a month ago, we went from being 3 hours programming to 4 hours. 2 hours on another station from 8 to 10, and 2 hours right here on sort of what we've always called our mothership, 570 KVI. This is where we started back in 1999. How about that? And we are glad to be here. We were able to grab this second hour, and that's fun. About a month ago or so. So a half hour a month. I'm losing time.
You're a little flustered.
Yeah,
today.
Well, I'm doing too many things here. I'm trying to get a hold of Brian McKay.
You know, as we get old, we don't multitask as well.
I am a fantastic multitasker. Anyway,
you just don't know where you are.
And you are the ultimate. You're texting and Googling and answering questions and making fun of me all at the same time.
As we old farts go, I'm a great multitasker.
That's right. So here we go. Let's go to Robert in Maple Valley. Robert, thanks for holding.
Thank you. I really thank you for your openness, your honesty, and your frankness in your program.
Well, thank you, sir.
I want to encourage you, you're missing one part of your quadrant in Puget Sound, and that's the Renton, Kent, Auburn, Covington, Maple Valley area. It'd be wonderful for you to have a clinic down here. It's a growing population. Yep. Would
well,
serve you well.
Yeah, but Renton, you're midway between Tacoma and Kirkland. And
have you ever tried I-5 and I-405?
Yeah, I have.
Well, I this agree. Isn't fortunate. Longevity is not like your grocery store where, you know, right. you need to live a couple of miles or so. This is a destination clinic.
If you're, because once you become a patient, you're seeing us on average about every 3 months, so.
Anyway, here we go. Okay. How can we help you, sir?
The thing today, I'm 70 and all of our dear departed grandmothers had a lot of homeopathic remedies.
They did.
Mustard patches on the chest, mentholatum, menthol in the nose, swabs, alcohol swabs in the nostrils. What are your opinions today for coronavirus dealing with those kinds of issues?
Okay. First of all, since we're talking about grandmother's nostrums, though, let me share my maternal grandfather's great nostrum. He was kind of an interesting character, right, to start with.
Your great-grandfather?
My grandfather. You're my great-grandfather. No, it was my father's father.
Okay.
My father was born on his father's 74th birthday. You got to remember.
Serious?
Yeah. So older men with younger women is a tradition in my family.
I guess.
He was a part-time farmer, of course, because he lived way out in the boondocks in South Carolina. He was also a part-time Southern Baptist minister. And somehow he managed to square that with always keeping a couple of mistresses on his life. And he made a little moonshine. But other than that, he was a completely conventional character. And But he used to have a little moonshine he kept down in the barn, and he didn't like the children to know that it was moonshine, though we all knew, so he called it sand. So there was always a mason jar full of sand available. And if we got a cold or a runny nose or a cough, Grandma would take some of Grandpa's sand, there's a little bit of moonshine, add some honey to it, throw in a little bit of pepper, and pepper, honey, and moonshine, a big tablespoon of that went down your throat. It may not have cured what ailed you, but you sure felt better if you took it very often.
Well, it's like my grandmother had all kinds of potions. She said, you do what I tell you, and in 10 or 12 days,
you're going to be better. That's right. All right. Anyway, coronavirus cures. There are a lot of things being studied right now. The one I find interesting is the cheapest and the first one that came out, and that was the hydroxychloroquine with azithromycin and now zinc being added to the combination. And I guess to make this, to make you understand this, I break coronavirus infections down into four categories. There are the asymptomatic people, the people that get infected and they have an immune system that is so good, they whack the virus and they never know they got sick. And it turns out that probably most of the people who get the virus don't know it. They get it, they get well, and they make antibodies to the virus, and they're copacetic. They didn't need therapy. Second is the group that they get sick, they get an immune response, they make good antibody, but they're sick for 3 to 5 days. If I had it, that's what I had, and then I coughed for an additional two to three weeks after I got rid of the infection. That's the group that probably responds best to the hydroxychloroquine azithromycin group. Okay. Because you've got both a drug that does have some apparent impact on receptor sensitivity. In other words, it alters the receptors in your lung and in your body so the virus doesn't get a very good foothold and makes it easier for your immune system to clear it off. There are some fascinating retrospective studies going on right now. For instance, we have tens of thousands of people, probably 50 to 100,000 people in this country that have been on hydroxychloroquine for years for their lupus.
Right.
And thus far, Dr. Oz has been working with several of the lupus associations, and they are trying to find anyone that has been on this drug for their lupus that has gotten COVID-19. And they can't find anybody yet.
No kidding.
So it would appear that at least as a prophylaxis, it's effective for preventing the disease.
We are talking, didn't you say, hundreds of thousands of people?
Yes. And they are looking, again, they're searching databases and stuff and trying to find some. But he says that working with some of the top lupus researchers in the country, they've not been able to find anybody that has been on that drug for prophylaxis that has come down with the disease.
Good night.
Okay. There are several good small studies that show, and the biggest study is 200 people, and there was one with 30 some people and so on. But several of these smaller studies are showing that when given to people that are not critically ill, they clear the virus very quickly.
They have it.
They have it. They've been documented to have it. They are sick, but they're not critically ill. Seems to clear it pretty well. The next group are the people that get the virus. Their immune system is not strong enough to throw it off very well, and they end up hospital sick. Those people are responding hit or miss. Some of them are getting better pretty dramatically with the therapy, and others are not responding as well. So there are subgroups within that. And then there are the people that are respirator sick. Those people are not going to respond to the hydroxychloroquine azithromycin worth a hoot, because what's killing those people is not the virus. Those people have triggered an overwhelming autoimmune response from the virus. And even if you kill the virus, that autoimmune response is what is destroying their lungs and their kidneys. And 80% of those people are going to die no matter what you do. Respirators are not going to save 8 out of 10 of those people because they have this overwhelming autoimmune response that was triggered by the virus.
Got it.
Okay. So we have different subgroups. The moderately ill people seem to respond pretty darn good to the hydroxy, azithromycin, zinc. And this hospital sick people, pretty good. but again, they don't have as good an immune system to help the drug. And then there's the critically ill people that basically it's going to be worthless for. Does that answer some of your question, or are you still on the line?
Yeah.
I'm still on that. That's true. You know, what about the old alcohol swab in the nostril and mentholatum under the nose?
Yeah. Or the zinc. The zinc sprays in the nose. I don't know, yeah. You know, about these. These are grandma's nostrums. And, you know, I don't know of any real studies that make them work. You know, when I was growing up, I had a couple of Jewish friends, and they used to swear that chicken soup was Jewish penicillin. Their mothers gave them hot chicken noodle soup for every illness they got. I don't know.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir. Take care.
Appreciate Bye-bye. The call. Okay, we're going to go to a break just a tad early because I don't want to interrupt Don from Kent, who has some questions about, is this thing going to create an uptick in other diseases? And I'd like to also ask you, Jerry, and then Fred has a question about coughs and various other things, but I want to ask you about how people, I mean, we're designating these deaths as coronavirus deaths.
Yes.
But are they all really deaths due to the virus?
Okay. Let's talk about that a bit.
How do you define what is a legitimate coronavirus
That's a good question.
Death? So anyway, don't go far. We'll be back before you know it.
I definitely would recommend that people attend a seminar. It was a great overview of what he does, but the real results are in the program, and that speaks for itself. The results came almost immediately, and they've been getting better and better.
Okay, welcome back. Pete Talbot here. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine with the very own, the one and only, Dr. Jerry Mixon.
There's usually a consensus that one is enough.
One is enough. Lord knows that's true. All right. Let us go to Don in Kent. Don, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning, sir.
Hi, I have a question. I was prompted to call by the gentleman about an hour ago who was like on a two-year recall for a colonoscopy.
Yes.
Won the medical lottery. I'm on a two-year recall for colonoscopies, and I had one scheduled for this spring, which has been postponed to this fall. And my question is this. Because I saw in the newspaper today, front page of the Seattle Times, this stay-at-home order may be extended beyond May 4th.
Yes.
And we are going to see so many diagnostic procedures, your basic mammograms, your basic colonoscopies, all these other things that are going on that are being postponed in some cases months. And that's going to result in missed opportunities to find things that are critical, like what that gentleman was talking about an hour ago.
Absolutely
and
true.
What they don't like when they go in and do a colonoscopy on me. And I'm asking, is it possible, are we going to start to see a uptick in a year or two of excess cancer deaths because of all this diagnostic procedures
And let me just say, Don, we've got a connection problem, and so I suggest you hang up and you just keep listening, and Dr. Mixon will follow that because there's a horrible hum there.
Yeah, there's
and
a
we
loud hum.
So
whistle.
You listen to his response just on the regular radio. Thank you. All right, go ahead, Jerry.
All right, probably there will be an uptick, and the uptick will get longer depending on how long we have to put all of our optional procedures in abeyance. You know, a three-month delay is not going to cause many deaths. Most of the time, three-month change in cancer delay is not that big a deal. You've got to have a really, really aggressive cancer.
Sure.
To you know, for instance, mammograms. The time between the cancer starting and getting big enough for us to even find it, in most women, is 3 to 5 years. So, you know, you get a three-month delay in a cancer that you can't even find for the first 3 to 5 years anyway.
Yeah.
That few-month delay is not going to be a big deal. Colon cancers, once more, if you've got somebody that's got polyps in their colon, yes, the cancer usually begins at the tip of the colon or at the tip of the polyp. So we grow these adenomatous polyps in our colon. And at some point, the tip of that polyp becomes dysplastic, and then the dysplasia develops into a cancer, and then the cancer grows down the polyp until it finally gets to the base of the polyp and invades the wall of the colon. That is a process that takes some time. So once more, 3 months probably not going to be a big deal. A year? Well, now I think we're going to start seeing some problems. And hopefully it won't be that long, because next year this time we should have a vaccine or two or three available, and we'll start vaccinating the population. I think we're also going to get some interesting things. We've got at least 9 drugs that are in trials right now to see if we can treat the disease. I think we are going to do multiple prongs as we open our society. We're going to be, first of all, doing antibody testing to see who's already had the disease and didn't know it. We don't know what percentage of our population is actually resistant to the disease already. I have seen studies in Germany that say as low as 15% of the population. I've seen studies in Italy that say as much as 60% of the population may already be resistant. So somewhere between 15 and 60%. So take a midpoint. Let's say a third of us have had it and I've already recovered, and we're resistant. Hey, that portion of the population can go back to work and has low risk of catching it again. Not zero, because some people's immune systems are better and more resilient than others, but the resistance to the disease. I think we are going to become a mask-wearing society. I think we are going to become like Hong Kong and Singapore, and it is going to become socially de rigueur to wear your mask in public.
And for those of you who have just tuned in earlier in the show, the statistics in Hong Kong are amazing.
They've got one of the most densely populated cities on the planet. Their subways are operating, their restaurants are operating, the streets are full of people, but everybody's wearing a mask. And they're not wearing the fancy N95s. Those are saved for hospitals. They're just wearing plain old-fashioned surgical masks. But they have fewer than 500 cases in this very densely populated.
That's just amazing.
It is.
It's work. What you're saying is the
masks work. Masks work. Now, they're obsessive about the mask. If you wear your mask, they will not let you in the store without one. They will not let you in the restaurant without one. Taxi cabs will not pick you up without one. People treat you like you are, you know, the biblical leper, ringing the bell and shouting unclean. You don't have a mask, you are ostracized. You go in a restaurant, you sit down, you wear your mask while you order food, you do your chit-chatting, you're visiting. When the food arrives, you pull your mask down, you eat, and then you put your mask back up. All right, so they're really obsessive about it.
Yeah.
But it works. So we are going to, first, we want to find out who's already been infected. Second, we're going to start becoming a mask-wearing society. Third, we are going to start treating people very early with whichever drugs or combinations of drugs we show in our current studies that work the best. Maybe it'll be hydroxy. Maybe it'll be some other drug. There's some of the new antivirals and stuff that are being tested. We will shortly have a drug or two or three that will have at least partial efficacy that we'll treat people with very aggressively so they never get sick enough to go to the hospital. And then finally, we will bring vaccines on board a year or so from now that we can start protecting the herd immunity so that 70, 80, 90% of us will be immune to the virus.
Yeah.
And then life really gets easier. So I think it's going to be in stages.
Okay. Well, John, again, sorry we had to cut you off. We had that connection problem, but I hope you heard that, as did everybody else. So let's go to Tacoma and talk with Fred. Hello, Fred. Thanks for calling in.
Hello, this is Fred from Tacoma. I'm a 77-year-old man. Can
you
hear
me
okay?
I hear you just fine. Go ahead.
And 20 months ago, I started to get a cough.
Uh-huh.
And then the doctor changed me from Lenispril to Atenol.
Uh-huh.
And in 2 or 3 weeks, the cough went away.
Yes.
However, last October, and I'm still taking Atenol, I started to get the cough back last October with added sniffles. And then along with that came gastritis and heartburn and a slight sore throat. So I'm thinking, gosh, am I getting this cough again from the blood pressure Atenol, or am I getting it from Trazodone for my sleep, or am I getting it from the other drug for...
All right. Let me touch on a couple of these things real fast. Lisinopril, which you were taking for blood pressure, is famous for causing a cough. Okay. It's the number one reason to stop taking that drug is cough. And you're not sick. It's an adverse reaction from the drug. It's well recognized. All of the drugs of that class also can cause cough. Lisinopril is probably the worst of the bunch.
Famous for it.
Yes. But all of the drugs in that class can cause a cough in some people, and it's usually dose-related. And some people are sensitive to it more than others. So that first thing that you got without the sniffles, that was almost certainly a drug reaction, and you weren't sick. You just had to change drugs. When you got the sniffles, that was different. Now, you could have had a cough from the medicine and a sniffle, or the sniffle could have been a little upper respiratory virus that caused the cough. I don't know at this point. But sniffles are not usually coincident with the drug or caused by the drugs.
Oh,
very,
okay.
Very few drugs will cause runny nose. A few do, but very few. Biggest problem is dryness, not runny nose.
So, dry mouth?
Dry mouth is fairly common for a lot of drugs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but not usually the nose for some
And constipation, but that's another story.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Does that answer your question,
after
sir?
After one or two meals.
Yeah. All right. I think for you, it sounds like we were looking mostly at drug reactions.
Okay. So maybe I should, if I can ever see a doctor on a normal basis, have him check to see if I can switch from Atenol to a different blood pressure.
Yes, yeah, the Atenolol may well be doing it for you.
What I have done, doctor, in the last 3 weeks, I quit taking one of my blood pressure pills. I've been taking the hydraulic whatever 12.5. I don't know what, can't even pronounce it.
Hydrochlorothiazide.
Yeah, I stopped Atenol for 3 weeks, and my blood pressure is only running about 140 over 85 without that.
Well, okay, 140 over 85 is not awful. I would like that lower number to get down below 80.
The reason why I did that, doctor, was that, okay, I stopped taking Atenol to see if I'm lose the cough. It's been 3 weeks now, and I haven't lost the cough.
Yeah, well, if you're still coughing after 3 weeks, it's not the Atenolol, I can tell you that.
How this is a crazy question, Doc. How sick should I get before going to the emergency? Do I wait till I got a fever that I'm just burning up like hell, or kind of getting a fever? Or
okay, well, first of all, let's stay away from emergency rooms if you can. Okay.
Right.
There's other sick people there. And if you weren't sick when you went, you might get sick when you get there and get exposed to them. So, older people stay away from emergency rooms unless it's truly an emergency. Urgent care centers are a step down from that, and regular doctor visits, you know, are better yet. But most of the time, you know, if all you've got is a cough and a runny nose and some body aches and stuff, you don't normally need much in the way of medical care. What you need is just rest and fluids, and your body will usually take care of it. Now, at your age, you may get sick, and if you start getting sick fast, you'll have no choice. You'll have to get into the ER and get seen. But
it's kind of a balancing, you know, because the sooner you deal with it, the better, but you don't want to go too soon.
Well, and again, if we had standard drugs such as the hydroxychloroquine stuff that have very low side effects, and yes, there are potential problems, but they're very, very low.
You would not hesitate.
I would take it in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Okay, I would not think. I take the azithromycin, the hydroxychloroquine, and the zinc. And I would not hesitate for 2 seconds.
Is azithromycin hard to get?
No.
Azithromycin, get that now?
You can get it now. It's around everywhere, and it's dirt cheap. You get the generic Zithropax. It runs $6 for a course of therapy.
And there's plenty of it.
There's plenty of it, yeah.
Okay.
So if I were getting something that I thought was that, I'd take that combination of drugs without hesitation.
You also just mentioned zinc. Do you mean just like the zinc we sell at Longevity?
Yes, we've got a zinc supplement we use at Longevity, okay. And I would throw that in. Zinc, we know, is an antiviral, and there are good studies going back decades showing that zinc supplementation decreases colds. The other coronaviruses that hit our upper respiratory tree, that hit our nose and sinuses and give us, you know, stuffy, runny noses and stuff, zinc helps those coronaviruses. Now, whether it will help the other coronavirus, we don't really know.
I don't know, yeah.
But people are using it just because, well, we know it helps this one. It might help that one.
Hey, Fred, good luck with your cough. Sorry about that. But we appreciate your call. And with Fred hanging up, that opens a line. So give us a call at 1-888-312-5757. When we come back, we've got a question. Oh, how about that? From Paul in Bellingham about zinc, and then Armin from Maury Island has another question about the virus. It's no wonder we're talking about the virus a lot today, but it doesn't have to be. Your question does not have to be about the virus. Call us if you'd like, and we'll be back before you know it.
They called you about the health analysis that I took a year ago. I went to the Linwood office, and I must tell you, your staff is so amazing. At Longevity, they talk to you. They make you understand what's going on, and they give you the numbers so you have a starting point. And that's what I love about coming to you guys.
Minutes past the hour. You know, this nice lady just made a wonderful comment about our Linwood staff.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I like our Linwood staff.
Well, they are.
And our Kirkland staff.
And our
Tacoma staff.
I have to.
That's why I pay their checks.
I have to tell you, we have some really, really wonderful people working
for us. Yes,
we do. Are we blessed or what? Anyway, the free health, she was referring to, she came in the free health analysis appointment and was really overwhelmed by the quality and the courtesy and customer service, all that sort of jazz. Well, we made a big announcement last Saturday, and I've been saying it again today, that because of the uptick in interest in health, it's kind of interesting, supplement sales all over the world are going crazy.
Yes, they are.
All of our suppliers have said that they are going nuts. And it's not just with sort of the quote-unquote immune system products. It's everything.
Yes.
Everything.
People are buying all kinds of supplements.
Just because they're starting to realize, maybe it makes sense to pay more attention to our health. And so I guess that's why we've had to go to Bia and our staff and make additional health analysis appointments available. But we've done sort of a double whammy because we're so convinced if you want to be stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, and sexier, and it's finally hit you there's never been a better time to do that, to start that process, well, you'll want to make a free health analysis appointment. But the double whammy I'm talking about is, yes, you'll get your two free tests, but if you come in April, we're going to also give you $100 of our longevity supplements, and you can pick whatever you'd like. We're just not going to give you some obscure supplement. You can pick whatever you'd like, and we have dozens, all of the basics, you might say, and then some. So the two free tests and $100 worth of our supplements, sort of a little extra thank you, and we will take good care of you. Again, we take your temperature before you even come into the clinic. Our staff can't even get into the clinic unless we take their temperature, make sure they're feeling well, ask them the same questions we'll ask you. So it'll be comfortable, it'll be safe, and all of our staff are wearing masks, so there's no reason not to come in. And especially now with the $100 worth of free supplements.
The only reason I can think of not to come is if you enjoy being slow, fat, weak, tired, sexless, and stupid. But hey, you know, whatever turns you on.
This is the time. People are starting to realize that we better get serious about our health. For so many reasons. So a lot of you out there, what's happened apparently, you know, Jerry, we've been on the air for 21 years, and people are starting to realize, well, I better not procrastinate any longer. Now's the time. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good decision. So again, go to our website. You get a free health analysis appointment two ways. You go to our website, which is the easiest, fastest, at lmclinic.com. And it's a real easy process, lmclinic.com. And, or if you don't have access to a computer, you simply go and call us at 866-86-YOUNG, 866-86-YOUNG, and make your appointment that way. So be there or be square. Now that doesn't make sense. Call, definitely call or go online at lmclinic.com. Let's go to Bellingham and talk to Paul.
Hello, Paul.
Welcome to the show.
Hi. I understand that that zinc is helpful or is a remedy for being asymptomatic. And but to know how much you're supposed to be taking, would you?
Yeah, that's the trick.
What do you think about having your hair mineral analysis?
Well, you can, I guess. I'm not thrilled about hair analysis simply because it's a real lagging indicator. Different portions of your hair will have different amounts of metals in it. What I'm really interested in, I guess, if I'm trying to do diagnostics, is to find out how well your body is using the metals you've got. You know, we do a test for our patients that we have questions about that looks at 36 different dietary
nutrients
of different sorts, zinc, copper, chromium, lots and lots of stuff. And so we're looking at a series of vitamins and minerals and so on. And they actually are looking at how active and what the levels are within the cytoplasm of some of your cells and how it's affecting those cells to work. It's not a real cheap test, so we don't run it on people over and over and over. But if we have a person that we are trying to fine-tune their supplementation and for some reason we're having trouble, we'll often run one of those tests.
And yeah, we will offer it to our patients. Yeah, it is extra.
It's $300 or thereabouts, yeah, I think. So I don't remember exactly, but you know, I mean, not a fortune, but enough to make you think about it.
I think it's a spectacular test.
Well, I've had the test. I've had the blood work done several years ago now.
Okay.
And what would I look at? Like the sodium, the
If you've had that particular, the test we're talking about, it will look at specifically zinc and copper and your B vitamins and your folate and your C's and, you know, it this is a particular test looking at supplements, not at hormone levels. So this isn't looking at testosterone.
Okay, I don't see anything here about zinc on this chart here that I have before me.
Okay, well then you didn't do the test I'm thinking about then.
Right. Okay, I did the test, which was like $500 or so. I think a test about 60 different your blood in 60 different ways.
Okay. What sorts of things are on that test? What sorts of things are on that test?
Well, I've got I've got the alkaline phosphatase. I got the AST.
Yeah,
I
see,
got
those
the
are,
AG ratio and the.
Those are all liver enzymes.
Pardon me?
Those are just liver enzymes. Those are not nutrients.
Okay. Yeah. I got all the blood work done too. The hemoglobin and the.
And that's part of your CBC, but that's not the test we're talking about either. This is not the test we do on everybody. This is a test we only do on people where we're working with their supplementation, and for some reason we're having a problem getting them solved. Then we are doing a specific test that is looking at the nutrients, the vitamins, the minerals, and so on within their cells. That's not the test you're describing. It sounds to me like what you did was our initial intake test, where you come in. Yeah. And that is looking at your inflammatory markers, your eight different hormones, your liver and kidney function studies, your CBCs, all of that stuff. That's a very different test.
Okay.
Anyway.
So how much zinc would be, enough could help you, but it also can hurt you.
Yes.
I guess that applies to zinc as well then.
Yes, it does with everything, including water. You can overdose and die from water. And usually it depends on the individual, but for most people, 50 milligrams of zinc is
that one of our pills?
I think it's, I think ours is, we have a 50 and I think 100 milligram zinc capsule in our supplement list.
Anyway. So there you go. Anything else, Paul?
Okay. Well, and one more quick question here. Now, you don't lymphatic system. I imagine getting enough of that, moving your lymphatic system could be helpful too.
Yeah, but I mean, lymphatic drainage is not something you take.
It's something you exercise when you're moving the lymph nodes or the lymph glands.
Right. Where you're moving the muscles, basically. And when muscles contract, they compress the lymphatic tree and push the lymph back towards your heart where it gets dumped into the venous circulation again. Yes. Yeah. Lymph, your cells are always kind of oozing liquid, and the lymphatic tree kind of picks up that liquid from the intracellular cytoplasm and carries it back and dumps it into the bloodstream again so that you can recirculate. And that's what the lymphatic tree is all about. But yeah, that's mostly a function of muscle contraction. That's why exercising and using your muscles regularly is great, and sedentary lifestyle is dangerous.
So there you go.
Thank you.
And with that in mind, we are past our break. So we're going to go there right now. Thanks, Paul, for that question. When we come back, we'll talk with Armin and Rick about zinc again. We got another zinc question, and then we got another virus question. So don't go far.
I'm in the longevity program in Linwood with Dr. Armstrong, and I'm very happy. And one of the things I realized why it's being very successful for me is that I feel like I have a personal coach.
The night was clear and the moon was yellow, and the leaves came tumbling down. I was standing on the corner when I heard my bulldog bark. He was barking at the two men who were gambling in the dark.
48 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. Pete Talbot here along with Dr. Jerry Mixon. And let's go to Maury Island. I'm not sure where that is. Armin, welcome to the show. Tell me where Maury Island is.
Maury Island is connected by an isthmus to Vashon Island. So people sometimes think I'm calling from Hawaii. So it's not Maui Island. It's Maury.
Maury. Okay, good.
If you're old enough to know the whiff and poofs from Yale University, song, yeah. You know, the tables down at Maury. Anyway.
All right.
I have as many as three questions, and I don't know if there's enough time related to COVID. Maybe the biggest is there seems to be some controversy growing now. There have been several articles that have come out by epidemiologists and so on that we may have made a colossal error in doing handling this the way we have, the social distancing and closing the schools, that we're not going to get the herd immunity and we'll have a second wave in the fall, that we should have sheltered in place the elderly and people that are more compromised and let the kids be in school because so few kids get it, unlike the pandemic of 1918, which was an equal opportunity killer. It killed the young and the old. So I wonder if you could comment on that.
Okay.
The second question was going to be, and I think you touched on that, that this business about the coding of deaths. I've heard one piece on the news that in Italy they're recoding the deaths. As many as 88% are not from the virus, but people died with the virus, but that's not what killed them. And the third, if you even get to it, is what is this virus? It's not actually a living organism.
No viruses.
It's very easily destroyed, but what is it? How does it come into existence if it's not a living thing? And so those are my three areas.
All right. Well, I don't think we have time to touch on all three very much, but let's start. First of all, yes, I think we made a mistake, but it was one that the Communist Party of China forced on us. It turns out, in retrospect, you know, it's always things are always clear through the rectospectoscope, but not looking forward. Our military medical intelligence groups, and we actually have a military intelligence looking at health because we want to protect our troops that are in places like Asia. And they picked up signs of a probable epidemic going on in Wuhan, China, back in the last half of November. At that time, of course, China was not admitting anything. But if
they knew.
If we knew, they knew.
Yeah.
Right. Because our spies and satellites could pick up the patterns showing that there was a dramatic increase in hospital activity and medical care. Now, we didn't know what the virus was. We didn't know what it was that was going on there. We just knew that something bad was happening in Wuhan. And of course, if the Chinese authorities didn't know, then they're really dumb because how could we know when they don't? They did know by the end of November, early December, that this was a viral illness. But they kept it secret until late December to early January, and then they told the world, including the World Health Organization, that this was caused by an animal contagion in the wet markets in
their
Wuhan.
Meat markets, yeah.
And that the wet market was basically not human to human spread. It was animal to human only. And nobody got excited because we figured, well, if it's only animal to human, then only people exposed directly to that market are going to get sick. And so they lied about that, even though they knew they were getting thousands upon thousands of infections, human to human. They continued to lie about that until mid to late January. They finally admitted, well, maybe there's some human to human spread. And that's when they locked down Wuhan. And by that point, we were getting 15 to 20,000 Chinese visitors per day coming into the United States, a significant portion of them carrying the virus. So we were seeding all over America and Europe. Within 6 days of discovering that this was indeed a human contagion that we were at risk for, Mr. Trump shut down travel from China. Unfortunately for Italy, a lot of those people who would have come to Disneyland in Florida decided to go to sunny Italy instead. And so Italy got seeded with a very heavy virus load from China. And you see the consequence there. If we had been able to do like Hong Kong and Singapore and South Korea, yes, we would not have needed so much social distancing. We would not have had to shut everything down. But we got sandbagged, which is why I say we should not call this the China virus. We should call it the CCP virus, the Chinese Communist Party virus, because it was that particular political group that caused the world's problems.
That's right.
And they need to get whacked. You know, in South Korea, they got hit with two previous epidemics from China. They got hit with both SARS and MERS. And so they did what we are now starting to do, because we didn't get hit by the other two worth a hoot. They decentralized. They authorized laboratories all over South Korea to develop their own diagnostic tests to any new epidemic that came out. We kept ours centralized with the CDC. And when the CDC, our government experts, came up with the first test, it was faulty. It missed 30% of the cases. And they had to recall them all, fix them, and reissue them. Whereas South Korea had 30 or 40 labs around that much smaller country, each developing their own test and getting them out into the public and doing testing so they could isolate cases, treat the person who was positive and their direct contacts, and limit the number of people that got sick. And that was the goal. That was what happened in South Korea. That's what happened in Japan. That's what happened in Singapore. And so that approach works if you are able to do a lot of tests in a hurry and you have a limited number of people coming in. But because we got sandbagged and because we had a centralized testing system that was limited to the CDC, we got stuck. So we are where we are. I don't like it, but we're there.
How about the coding of deaths? We've only got
I don't know. Yes, you know, obviously people with heart disease and lung disease and diabetes and obesity are the ones that are dying by far the most. And
how much
of it is caused by which?
Well, I saw one guy, one doctor, supposedly a famous guy, saying that he was upset about the coding process. He says, for example, if an older person got hit by a truck, severely hit by a truck, and brought to the hospital,
and he's corona
positive, he's going to die, and he's corona positive, they credit it to corona. That's an extreme.
That is an extreme, and I suspect that sort of thing is a modest degree. See, what was your third one?
The RNA. What? It's not alive.
Okay.
What is?
Yeah. Okay. A virus is a packet of genetic material that is surrounded by a protein coat and frequently with a lipid holding it together. And they don't reproduce on their own. So they don't have reproductive capacity by themselves. So we don't say they're alive. They don't eat, they don't drink, they don't respire, and they don't reproduce. Once that virus comes in contact with a cell that does have all of the components for life, it basically replaces your genetic material with its own. And your cells set about making new virus. And they do nothing but make virus until the cell fills up, it ruptures, and releases the virus to all the surrounding cells. And that's how the virus spreads. Once your immune system recognizes that there's something bad going on and there is a foreign invader, then you make antibody to that virus that comes in and destroys the virus and rips it apart and you get well. Unless you're one of that very small subset, 1% or so of the population or less, that the virus comes in, you overreact to it and you develop an autoimmune process that destroys your lungs and your kidneys, and you die on a respirator in the hospital. You didn't die directly from the virus. You died from a defective response by your immune system to the virus. So it's complex. But, yeah, we can call me early in a show next week. I love to talk about what constitutes living and dead.
And with that in mind, our 4 hours is up. But thanks so much. If you are among the many, believe me, we're feeling it at Longevity. A lot of you want one of our free health analysis appointments. The good news is we put some more on the books. We did some juggling. We put some more on the books. Yes, you still get the 2 free tests. But the really good news, in April only, if you come in April only, you get $100 worth of longevity supplements as well. Your choice.
And a mask.
That's right. He keeps having to remind me. You get your mask, too, and masks for your immediate family. Anyway, in your house, immediate family. So go to our website, lmclinic.com. You make your own appointment at lmclinic.com.